This program is brought to you by Cabinet, a nonprofit arts organization based in Brooklyn, New York. Cabinet depends on your support to continue our activities. For more information, visit us online at cabinetmagazine.org.
Good evening. Hi, welcome to Show and Tell at Cabinet. My name is Paul Lucas. I've been hosting this event on a monthly basis for about a year and a half, first at the City Reliquary in Williamsburg, and for the last 2 months here at Cabinet. I want to thank Cabinet and Sina Najafi especially for hosting us. Let's have a little round of applause for Cabinet. For those of you who haven't been here before, you can see it's a beautiful space. Cabinet is a wonderful, wonderful arts magazine and is worth so much more than the $6 per back issue that they're charging in the back. So if you want to see what Cabinet's all about, I heartily recommend that you try an issue. End of commercial for Cabinet. Show and tell is exactly what it sounds like. We've all done show and tell, you know, back in the second grade. You bring an object and you talk about it. We try to keep the object discussion down to 3 minutes, 3 minutes as timed by this egg timer. People often say to me, I want to participate, I want to come, but I don't know what to bring, I don't have a special enough object. And what I always say, and those of you who've been before have heard me say it many times, it's not about the object, it's about the story. The most simple, banal object can be a great show-and-tell object. Almost everyone here has something that is show-and-tell worthy in their pocket or in their bag or in their purse, whether you know it or not. And so some of you may be, you know, some of you have signed up, which is great. We've got almost a dozen people who are going to participate. But there are always people who are on the fence and who aren't sure, and they don't know if they have a good enough object. And I think you will see as the evening progresses that based on what other people bring, that any object can be a good show and tell as long as there's a good story behind it. I usually try to get the ball rolling with a few show and tells of my own. We'll have an intermission at one point, and during the intermission, those of you who've decided that you want to be on the participatory side of the fence can approach me, and we'll add you to the list for the second session. So I brought a few objects to get us started. And the first is this magazine in Braille. And I don't know if people in the back can see, but it has this really wonderful texture to it. It's printed on this really thick craft paper. It's very satisfying to touch. It's got this sort of rough texture. And it also seems so incredibly random, and it really makes you understand and appreciate how completely difficult it must be to learn Braille. Or any language, you know, any alphabet, you know, whether it's Cyrillic or Japanese, Chinese, that isn't familiar to us, just looks like gibberish. And the idea that this is some sort of encoded classification system seems hard to imagine. And so it's, at the same time, it's sort of simultaneously beautiful and pleasing and yet indecipherable. But the best part about it is what magazine this is. And I don't know if everyone in the back can see. This is a copy. This is the May 2000 issue of Martha Stewart Living, which is probably the least Braille-friendly magazine imaginable, except maybe for Penthouse or something like that. It's hard to imagine a sight-impaired person, you know, doing the 37-step recipe or designing the super special centerpiece for their table or whatever. And yet, here it is. And I said, you know, it's the least imaginable or least Braille-friendly title aside from Penthouse. I have learned that, in fact, most of the girly magazines do have Braille editions. So, and Martha Stewart Living is sort of a form of lifestyle pornography. So, and maybe that's a good comparison to make. Anyway, it's sort of surprising, and it would be good. It would be a pleasing object if it were any magazine, just because the Braille is so interesting. But I think it's so much better that it's Martha Stewart Living. This was given to me by a friend of a friend. I was visiting friends in Wisconsin, and we were just out drinking, and we were just talking about shit, and I just said I like unusual objects, and she said, I have an object for you. And about a month later, this showed up in the mail. I'd forgotten all about it. I'd forgotten that she mentioned it to me, and I'd given her my card with my address on it, and then the package just showed up. And it's really one of my favorite objects that I own. I'm going to pass it around because that's part of show and tell too, is sharing. And does anyone here read Braille? Oh, that's too bad. I've shown and told this before. I don't know anybody who reads Braille, but it would be sort of fascinating to see. And I have another object that I brought. And this is a report card. It's actually a series of cards, but I just call it collectively a report card. From 1929, for a student named Esther Seawald, who attended a school in Manhattan called the Manhattan Trade School for Girls. And as you can see, it has actually a little mugshot photo of her. This is one of 395 report cards that I found in a discarded file cabinet some years ago. And they are completely amazing. Everything from the photos to the handwriting to, you can see grades and teacher comments like speech defect, hard of hearing, neat appearance, industrious, slow to grasp, but willing. So Esther seems like she was a good egg, even if she wasn't always at the top of the class. And there's all sorts of commentary like that, and there's also things like notes from doctors. This is a note from Morris Smaller, DDS, that's a dentist, obviously, February 8, 1932. "I have cleaned the teeth of Esther Seawald every few months. It takes a few days, and they again get that dark stain at the gum margin. There is nothing that can be done about it. It so happens that Miss Seawald takes care of her teeth regularly, so there is really no need to remind her about her teeth. Please leave her to my care. I will assume the responsibility." So apparently Esther had been reprimanded a few times about the care of her teeth, and here's the dentist kind of sticking up for her. And so imagine 395 of these stories. It's sort of this bottomless rabbit hole of amazing information. I've actually been trying to locate the families of these students. The students are all deceased. Esther died in the 90s. I have found her family. And I interview them and write about them. I'm a journalist, and I've been doing a project called Permanent Record, where I find the students' families and write about them. And it's pretty amazing stuff. But even if I never found the families, just this report card, it's so incredible. And again, imagine hundreds of them. I'll pass this around too. Please be gentle with it, because it's really special. So show and tell can be something amazing, like an artifact like this. It can be something unusual, like the Braille magazine. Or it can be something really simple and banal. How many people were here last month? A handful. Well, you're all going to indulge me and hear me say, do a show and tell that I did last time, too. Show and tell can be as simple as a coin. This quarter, which has a hole drilled in it, I got this at the Halloween parade in 1987, which was my first year in New York City, and I attended the Halloween parade with a bunch of friends, and it was a somewhat smaller enterprise in the West Village than it has become now. And there was this guy going along in the parade. There were lots of people sort of hawking this and that and promoting various causes, and this guy was handing out little tiny Ziploc baggies, each of which had a quarter and a slip of paper inside. And the slip of paper said, in case of emergency, call this number. And the number turned out to be for a runaway hotline. So this guy was promoting a runaway hotline for teens. So in case of emergency, you know, if you're in trouble, call this number. And it had a quarter because there were no cell phones back then. You know, it was you had to go to a payphone. And my quarter, for some reason, had this hole drilled in it right in the center of George Washington's head, like he's getting a lobotomy or something. And I decided it would truly be my emergency quarter. And I put it on my keychain because the hole was there. And it's been around the world with me. It's always been on my keychain. I've gone all over with it. It's dated 1981. So it's been on my keychain now for almost 25 years. It was spent only 6 years in circulation before that. So it spent a lot more of its life with me. And I feel this odd kinship with it. I've never spent it. I've never been in that tire of an emergency. And I've always wondered, would it actually work in a coin-operated gadget like a payphone or a candy machine or whatever? Because it no longer weighs as much as a quarter is supposed to weigh, because it's got this little divot taken out of it. And those machines tend to be very carefully calibrated in terms of the weight of the coin. And so I don't know if it would actually work. And since it does have a hole, I could tie a string on it and put it in and, like, you know, yank it back out if it didn't work. But the truth is, I don't want to know. I kind of enjoy wondering whether it would work or not. And that's kind of the it's the way you can feel sentimental about a really simple object. I kind of feel a nice connection to this. It reminds me of my first year in New York, my first Halloween parade, and the idea of the emergency quarter. I like the idea.